So we continue in volume 10, and we pick up at October the 8th, 1911, and we're talking about chastisements. This is just a very short message. Continuing in my usual state, Louisa said, I just barely saw my adorable Jesus, but so afflicted as to make the stones cry. He showed me cities besieged as if foreign people wanted to invade Italy. Now, every time you see peoples, knock out the S, because that's not English. You want foreign people to invade Italy. All were shouting with grief and fright, and some were hiding. And Jesus, all afflicted, said to me, my daughter, what sad times. Poor Italy, she herself is preparing the landing to perish. In other words, she's drawing this on herself. I've given her much. Now, what did he give to Italy? The centre of the church. That that Italy was to be the centre of the world because she was leading the world with regard to the church. I have favoured her more than any other nation because of that, because the gospel and the truth was to come out of her. In return, she has given me more bitterness. And that's parallel to what happened in Jerusalem. Jerusalem in the Old Testament was more privileged than anywhere else, and they gave the Lord more bitterness than anybody anywhere else. So Jerusalem had to be pulled down, so you can draw your own conclusion. And then Louisa said, as I wanted to pray him to placate himself by pouring his bitterness into me, he disappeared. So October the 10th, 1911, you see, we're very close to the First World War. And that's what she's noticing, that Italy is going to be way in the middle of that. So Jesus draws Louisa into his will. Okay. I feel I am dying with grief, Louisa said, and I keep repeating my refrain so very often. Poor brothers of mine, poor brothers of mine. This is her love of neighbour. Jesus has increased my grief by letting me see the tragedy of war. Now, she has no idea of the greatness of the war, because all he has done, he's shown her a little bit here, a little bit there, and a little bit yonder. But he hasn't shown her the fullness of the thing. She wouldn't have been able to cope with that at all. How much blood, it seems, was being shed and will be shed. Jesus seems inexorable and said, I cannot take any more. I want to finish with it. Now, the Old Testament tells us that war is the great chastisement from God. So, I want to finish with it, and you will do my will, won't you? And Louisa said, certainly, if you wish. But can I ever forget that these are your children who have come out of your own very hands? And Jesus said, but these children of mine suffer very much, and they not only want to kill their own father, that is the Lord himself, but they want to make themselves their own murderers. Now, if you know your Bible, that's a very good reading of the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem and the city of Jerusalem, and eventually the people are expelled from Israel. To kill their father means that you get rid of God. And the result of that is that you bring on extraordinary death, spiritual and physical, to yourself. If you knew how much they make me suffer, he said, you would conform. Now, conform means that she would agree to the chastisements. Now, in the early volumes, Louisa is not going to do that. It's actually not possible for her to do it because she has the role of a victim soul. We move now into volume 11 and into volume 12, where her vocation is changed completely into one of opening the kingdom of the divine will to everybody. And as she goes on, she will enter so completely into the divine will that she doesn't even know she's agreeing, if you know what I mean, because there's only one will between them. So whatever God does, that's it. The fact that she can resist at this particular point, her will is still completely clear as well as his. But later on, there's only one. And so you'll see this absolutely gigantic transformation that goes on in Louisa. So As he was saying this, he seemed to bind my hands. That's what you work with. And he clasped me so to himself that I felt so transformed in his will. That's, you see, she's getting a tiny taste of what's coming. As to lose the strength to do violence to him, that is to resist him. Okay. And then he added, I like it this way, all in my will. In other words, that would be his complete triumph. Okay. So on seeing my inability and also the tragedy, I burst out crying. And I said, my Jesus, what shall they do? There are no means to save them, at least save their souls. Now, as we go on in these writings, the Lord will explain that while war is a major chastisement and brings terrible disaster on whoever is involved in it, at the same time, God uses it to purify individuals and to purify nations. And one of the things he said about the two world wars is that many, I don't want to put a number on it, many soldiers would never have got to heaven without having had to sacrifice their lives. But because they sacrificed their lives for their neighbours, which was, you know, whoever they were fighting for, like, say, the Americans came to fight in a foreign land to try and liberate Europe. Well, in God's eyes, that was an extraordinary act of love. So that was the excuse to save them. So there was lots of things going on that we don't see. So it's like everything else. Things are not what they seem. And so while here at the beginning, in the early volumes, you're only hearing chastisement, 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 as if it was all negative. The point is, there's nothing negative with God. Psalm 101:4-5, verse 17 says, God only ever acts out of love. Psalm 104:5, verse 17. Okay? God only ever acts out of love. So if God permits the war, he can bring good out of it. Is that okay? And Jesus, Louise's final thing here, and she's going to give this up rather quickly. At least take me first. In other words, I don't want to see it. Now, when she says that, she's still falling back to a position of weakness because if the Lord, he's already explained it to her a number of times in the volumes we have done, that if he takes her, there's nobody to intercede for anybody. There's nobody to do the reparation that needs to be done. And the situation on earth would be infinitely worse. So he can't do that. So this opt-out thing is something that she's going to have to give up. And she will.
Padre Pio there. Padre Pio.
Yes.
We're only dealing with the revelation to Louisa. And Jesus said, you see, if you continue crying, I go away and I leave you alone. You want to afflict me. I will save all those who are disposed. Now, do you see the expression there? In other words, he's going to do an enormous amount of work during the war and he will deal with each person individually. Okay. Therefore, do not cry. We had the famous Father Willie Doyle who died heroically, just to give one example that we know. I will give you their souls, he said, be content. That means that these men who suffered so much and gave their only life in order to try and save Europe, for example, in the Second World War, that God took that as the reason to take them to glory, you know. So they didn't lose everything, if I can put it that way. Yeah. God is not like that. Should I perhaps no longer take you to heaven that you afflict yourself so much? Do you know that I won't take you? And since I continued to cry, Jesus seemed to withdraw and I had to shout loudly saying to him, Jesus, don't leave me. I'm not crying anymore. Now, isn't that exactly what a small child would say? Oh, Mummy, don't do that. I'm not crying anymore. The tears running down their faces. Yeah, okay. So she still has a good bit. The amazing thing to me is she has reached this extraordinary level of relationship with God and she still has a lot of growing to do. Isn't that fascinating? If you read the books of St. John of the Cross, 16th century, he says that the highest point you can reach in this life is union with God. So if you reach that point, then that's it. You can't go any higher. But we're living in the 21st century and the church knows you can go higher and higher and higher and higher. There's no stopping. There's absolutely no stopping, either on this, as you saw with that kid climbing the wall. There's no stopping. You just keep going. It's fascinating. So October the 11th, 1911, we're back to love again, because the summary of the 36 volumes is Divine Will and Love. Okay. My beloved Jesus continues to come for just a little, but always with the refrain of causing a tragedy. And not just this, but of letting Italy be invaded by foreign people. She really is screwed up about Italy, isn't she? If this happens, there will be great trouble in the singular for Italy. So I was saying to Jesus, the war, the wars, the earthquakes, the cities destroyed. Now you want to add this too. You really want to go too far, she says to him. The way she speaks to him lets you know that this is a real relationship, you know, which I find fascinating. But who will be able to resist? And Jesus said, my daughter, it's necessary. It's necessary. You do not understand well what excesses man has reached. And from all classes, priests, religious, who will purge them? In other words, this isn't just something that the politicians are cooking up. He's saying the church is in a mess. Everything's in a mess. So the whole thing has to be purified. I mean, have you ever come to the point of saying, now this house needs one hell of a clean? Yeah. Where will I begin? Okay, that's what the Lord is saying. The whole place needs to be cleaned up. So, is it not good for me to use foreign people in order to purify everything and to make them lower their haughty and proud heads? That's the issue. That's the issue. Okay, let me give you Isaiah chapter 2, verses 6 to 22. And very specifically, verses 9, 11 and 17. Three times the prophet says the pride of man must be brought low. Isaiah chapter 2, verses 9, 11 and 17. The pride of man must be brought low. 2 Peter 5, 5 to 9. Bow your heads before the power of God now and he will raise you up. James 4, 6. Proverbs 6:17. Now I'll give you James 4:6. God resists the proud and always favors the humble. Proverbs 6:17. Okay. God resists the proud and always favors the humble. And of course you have Our Lady's Magnificat and Luke 1. I can't remember the actual verse. Where she says he brings down the mighty from their thrones and raises the lowly. Yeah. So what is the reason why God will allow World War I and World War II? It's to humble the pride of the human race. Okay. So Louisa said, no, you can't do this. She won't be at this now in higher volumes. At least this of making the foreign people come. I will win you over with my love, she said. What am I saying? Rather with your love. Have you yourself not said so? You can deny nothing to someone who loves you. Okay. And Jesus said, do you want to win me over? It seems you want to fight with me. You see, he's able to read the real motivation that we want to put a fancy name on it, you know. but don't you know that true love is in the union of wills? There you have it. Put a big NB as big as you can put. True love is in the union of wills. And that's what the Lord is bringing all of us into. So Louisa got more excited and she said, certainly, united with your will in everything, but not in this. Now, there's Louisa showing us what we're actually like. That we'd say yes to 99% of it and then we'd say no to the rest of it. Okay, there's that little bit where we hold on to ours. And the Lord is trying to say, no. Here she said, you harm others. Here the harm of others enters, she says, very awkward English. We'll fight when the war has ended, but you won't win it. And Jesus said, bravo, you want to fight with me? And these two are supposed to love one another. And Louisa said, well, it's better to fight with you than with somebody else. Because you alone are the good one, the holy one, the lovable one who takes care of his children. And Jesus said, well, come with me for a little while. Let's go and have a look and see what the children are like. Isn't that very interesting? Just think of a conversation between a father and mother. And one of them is saying, we really have to take these kids on. And the other one is saying, no, everything's fine, it's fine. It's fine. Come and have a look and see what they've just done. Then when you get the evidence, then we'll talk again.
Yes.
That's exactly the content of this conversation, which is very interesting. And Louisa said, I don't want to come. She doesn't want to see the evidence. You don't want to give me anything. What would I come for? She said. Look at the way, look at the daring she has with the Lord. It's absolutely fascinating. And then we went, she said, who can tell the evils that could be seen and Jesus' reason for wanting to almost destroy us? She said, there are so many, I don't know where to start to tell them and therefore I won't. I'll stop. So the Lord says, listen, stop arguing. Let's have a look at the problem. So October the 12th, 1911, you're not going to believe it, we're still on chastisements because it's just before World War I. So all of this is Amos 3:7. The Lord tells the prophets ahead of time, okay? So Jesus continues to just barely make himself seen, but in the act of drawing my will so much to himself. Now notice what he's doing. He's drawing her into a deeper and deeper union with him in the will so that she will be able to agree with what he's doing. And I almost feel as if I wanted the chastisement, she says. What pain. It seems he let me suffer a little bit, telling me things will be grave. That's World War I. This little suffering of yours serves to content you. In other words, you want to suffer to try and do something. And to make me keep my word of sparing in part. Okay. In other words, if Louisa hadn't been doing what she was doing, World War I would have been infinitely worse. At least one third worse, because she usually gets one third. So Louisa said, thank you, Jesus, but I'm not content. I hope I can win you and placate you, because from the news one hears about the war, it seems that Italy is winning. And therefore, since Italy is winning, it will never get to the point that foreigners will invade. She won't have these foreigners. What would she do if she was living in the age where immigrants are coming in from all over the place and you don't know whether you'll meet someone of your own country that day or not? Jesus said, ah, my daughter, how they deceive themselves. Italy is winning, she said. I will allow the first triumphs to make them blind. Oh. What is the blindness? He will allow their own pride to blind them.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the enemy will plot their defeat. This is nothing yet. The triumphs they talk about are without battles and therefore without certainty. And Louisa said, I've seen it, Jesus. Keep me content. Placate yourself. And he said, my daughter. Okay. So things, as they say, things is bad. So you go from chastisements straight back to the thing that keeps us all sane, which is love. And this is a very important message about love. October the 14th, 1911. Notice the heading, everything is in love. Now, everything is said in those words, but just to make sure we know the words, Jesus will explain them. Everything is said in those words. My beloved Jesus made himself seen, wanting to fall asleep inside of me. So I want to give you Mark 4:38. That's Jesus asleep in the boat, do you remember? And I, distracting him, told him, Jesus, what are you doing? This is not the time for sleep. That was what the apostles told him as well, wasn't it? We're going down, you know. Times are sad, she said. Much vigil is necessary. Imagine telling God what to do. What is it? Do you want to make something grave happen today? And he said, let me sleep. for I feel all the need of it, and you should rest together with me. And she said, oh no, Lord, you suffer very much and rest is necessary for you. I don't. And then he said, and I sleep and you hold the weight of the world. That's grand. Isn't that lovely? You'll see you can do it. Do you remember he handed over the key of justice to her and she couldn't hold it for 5 minutes? Do you remember? Okay, now she gets the weight of the world. In other words, if you want to play God, go ahead. Because that's what human beings think they can do. And Louisa said, by myself, I will certainly not make it. But together with you, yes, that's the Philippians 4:13. I can do all things in Christ who gives me the strength. Besides, isn't love more than rest for you? She said, because God is love. I want to love you so very much, but with your own love. You love him with your own love, but only in the divine will. Okay. To be able to give you the love of all. Now, we have to fuse and then we enter into him, take his love, make it our own, and then you can love him on the part of everybody, and you can saturate all souls in the love of God for their salvation. So, besides, I want to love you so very much, but with your own love, to be able to give you the love of all. With love, I will soothe your every pain. I will make you forget all your sorrows. I will make up for all that the creatures would do. Okay. Now, Louisa usually does that when she does the adorations to all the parts of Jesus' crucified body. And she does this at least 4 times that I can remember in the hours of the Passion, where she starts at the head and she goes through everything, and then she makes reparation for all the sins of the eyes, the sins of the intellect, the sins of the ears, the sins of the mouth, and so on, as she's doing it. That's what she's saying. I'll make up for everything with my love. So in the next paragraph, Jesus has to tell her something. Now, he's told her before, but we human beings need to hear something about 10 times before we actually register it, okay? And that is, love is merciful, but it's also just. Now, the mistake we make is we think that mercy lets you off the hook regardless. And he says, no, all the divine attributes are equal. So love is just and justice is loving. Mercy is love and mercy is also just as well. So that's what he's going to tell us now. So Jesus said, what you say is true, but love is also just. How scarce is the number of those who fuse their lives completely in love. Now, we've come out of the century of deception, which was the 20th century. And we've had all kinds of so-called love things going on, like the flower children and the this and all that and the other, since the 1960s. And they were celebrating love. And when you pull the label off, it's L-U-S and T. That's deception. And Jesus says, how few are the people who give themselves to love. And this love has a capital L on it. Notice that. Therefore, it's divine love. How few people actually give themselves to divine love. Well, the good people give themselves partly. He says, how few people give themselves completely. Do you see the word completely? Mm-hmm. Now, that completely is Deuteronomy. You know the rest of it. 6:4-10. You shall love the Lord with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your being. Okay. I commend to you, my daughter, make known to everyone, because God loves everybody equally, that... to everyone you can, that everything is in love. The necessity of love. Now, love has a capital letter all the time, so we're not talking about human love. And that all that is not love, be they even holy things, instead of making them walk forward, will make them go backwards. So I want to give you Ephesians chapter 3, verses 16 to 21. That you're grounded in love, that you grow in love, you're built on love, you reach the fullness of love. I want to give you John 15:9. And 1 Corinthians 14:1. Okay. So Jesus said, may your mission be to teach the true life, notice capital L, of love, the true life of love, in order to pass on divine life and love, in which there is all that is beautiful of the creature and all that is most beautiful in which they can give to me. And Louisa said, how much it takes to make them understand this, she said. To some, it appears strange that everything is in love, and that by loving, love takes on the commitment to make them similar to you, who are all love. That's 2 Corinthians 3:18. 2 Corinthians 3:18. Now, the reason why Louisa says it takes an awful lot of time to convince people that everything is in love is that at the time that we're dealing with, back at the beginning of the 20th century, works was the thing. Works was the thing. And you counted all the good deeds that you did during the day and you said, well, I've done 10 good deeds today. Do you know what I mean? It's works. It's not love. Or you did stuff to keep you out of hell. Recently, a person confessed to me that after a very long life, this person is OL&D in Ireland, that he spent his entire life trying to survive hell. I said, that's no motivation to live. The problem is the man is nearer to 90 than any other number. And the absolute wrong motivation given to him. I said, that's not it at all. We're going to have to start putting some love in here. But how do you teach an old dog? It's unbelievable. Everything is in love. Our instinct says, no, 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 I'll do this and I'll do that. And it's, no, no, I'll do this and I'll do that. And I will be considered important because of what I've done. And Jesus says, no. It's the relationship you have with God is everything, everything, everything. And that relationship has to be love. If you had a child who did lots of things for you at home but didn't love you, which would you choose, the things or the love?
Love.
You'd prefer the child to love you. That's exactly the same with God. So why is Italy not going to be spared as Louisa wants it spared? It's because she's DEAD spiritually. Okay? So this is the last paragraph here. I add that on the 11th of this month, I had said to Jesus, either you will keep me on the cross or I will keep you on the cross. And since Jesus had shown me himself carrying a coffin all black upon his shoulders, and he was all bent under the weight of that coffin, he said to me, this coffin is Italy. It's probably the whole of Europe now. It's probably Ireland. I can no longer manage to carry it, he said. I feel crushed under it. And it seemed that as he rose, the coffin swung and Italy received a terrible shake. Now, that doesn't mean an earthquake. It means something that absolutely shook the whole system up. Okay, so October the 15th, 1911, again we're speaking about love. This morning, Blessed Jesus made himself seen burning with love. Now, the Holy Spirit is the love of God, okay? The breath that came out of him was so inflamed. Now, the breath of God is the Holy Spirit, Ruach Adonai. Was so inflamed that it seemed to be enough to burn everybody with love if they wanted it. And now notice the if. The problem is we've got free will. And so I said to him, Jesus, my love, how burning is your breath. Burn everybody. Give love to everyone, especially those who want it. And he said, burn all those who approach you. That's very interesting, isn't it? In other words, you're on the earth. You do it. You send love out from yourself. Okay. And Louisa replied, how can I burn them if I myself am not burned? At that moment, it seemed that he wanted to speak about chastisement. And I said, you really want to be... Now, the word in the book is impertinent. You cannot say that God is impertinent. It's a very, very negative term. I went to the dictionary and it said impertinent means rude, insolent, irreverent and inappropriate. So the translated word there cannot be correct. The only word I can put in at the moment is insistent. You really want to insist. And this is where, if you had the original translation, you'd know the flavour of what was being said. Not now, we'll think about it later. And then it seemed that the saints were praying my sweet Jesus to be allowed to take me to heaven with them. And Louisa said, see how good the saints are, that they want to take me with them. She's not going to die until 1947. It's absolutely amazing. It's not that you're not good, but that you're not good with me because you don't take me and so on. So there she's falling back to a position of wanting to sort of press him in a way that's not going to push things forward. So Jesus has a wonderful way of dealing with it. He withdrew, leaving me feeling very ugly. In other words, you need to change this one. And how nicely he did it, though. He didn't bang the door. So October the 16th, 1911, this is more stuff about chastisements and Italy and foreign people. This morning, my beloved Jesus threatened strongly to let Italy be invaded by foreign people. And I, getting huffy with him, told him, you really want to insist, don't you? You say you love me and I don't, and yet you don't want to content me in anything. Bravo, Jesus, she said. Is this the love you have for me? And I find it incomprehensible that the infinite, everlasting God would take this language from a human being. I just find it absolutely incomprehensible. I don't know about you. And Jesus said, to show you that I love you, for love of you, I will spare your environment. Now, that either means Corato, which is a very tiny little place. Your environment could be sort of not Selbridge, but it could be the whole of Kildare. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It could be a bigger area. He said, aren't you happy? And Louisa, crying out loudly, said, no, Lord, you can't do this. And he said, what is it? Why are you becoming huffy? And Louisa said, today I get huffy with you. And he disappeared. He's had enough. And I hope that he will placate himself. Then he seemed to be binding me so very tightly to himself in order to make me do his will. And he's doing it nicely. Because God only ever acts out of love. Now, if you take that conversation and put yourself in the position of Jesus, and herself in the position of someone related to you, close to you, I don't think you'd take it as much as he took it. Don't think so. It's not in us to take it like that when you know that something absolutely must be done. And it's absolutely necessary. And the other person is opposing you, and then saying you don't love me because, you know, and all the rest of it. It's very hard to take, isn't it? Okay. And so the reason why I'm giving you that comment is to let you appreciate the extraordinary love that Jesus has for us, the way he puts up with us. I often say to him, Lord, how do you put up with us? Us meaning the human race. So we're back to love again on October the 17th, 1911. It seems that my most sweet Jesus came for a little longer than usual. Notice it seems. That means it's not completely clear. It seemed he was wearing the crown of thorns, and I, removing it from him, drove it into my head. She's courageous. But after a little while, in looking at Jesus, I saw him crowned with thorns again. And Jesus said, see, my daughter, how they offend me. You removed one from me and they've woven another. They never leave me free. Look at that. They weave me crowns of thorns continuously. And so Louisa removed it again from him, and Jesus, pleased, drew near her mouth and poured a little bit of a most sweet liquor. It's very interesting. And Louisa said, Jesus, what are you doing? You are full of bitterness and you pour sweetness into me. This is not appropriate, she said. And Jesus said, let me do it. You too needed to be cheered up. From the last three messages, I would definitely have come to the conclusion she needed to be cheered up, wouldn't you? Even more, I want you to take some rest inside of my heart. So here's some references to rest, resting in God. Psalm 62, rest in God, my soul. So that's Psalm 62, Isaiah 14, 3. Isaiah 18, 4. Isaiah 28, 12. Matthew 11, 28 to 30, I will give you rest. And Mark 6, 31, come away for a little while and let us rest. And you can put an etc. after that because there's an enormous number of references to resting with the Lord or resting in him. And Louisa says, oh, how comfortable it was. And then he put me out. First of all, she had to rest inside of his heart. Okay, and then he put me out, she says. Why did you put me out? I was so comfortable in your heart, how beautiful it was. And Jesus said, when I keep you inside of me, I alone enjoy you. But when I put you out, everyone else enjoys you. And you can take the defense of your brothers. You can plead for them and you can have them spared. In other words, get back to your victim soul office. So much so that the saints say that I content you more than them. Isn't that absolutely amazing? So the love that Jesus has for this woman is quite extraordinary. So the saints are complaining and they say that I take more. Now, the word in my book is taste. Is that it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I take more satisfaction from your love than from theirs. Change to satisfaction. It's a much better understanding of the text. I take more satisfaction from your love than from theirs. And I say to them that I do this with love and with justice, because with you I can share my pains, but not with them. Their journey is over. Since you are a pilgrim soul, you can take the pains of others as well as mine upon yourself. And by this, you have the strength to disarm me. Now, you can see where she gets the power to disarm him in her victim soul role, that she will take the pains of another person upon herself. And therefore, whatever justice is due to that person, she is fulfilling it. And therefore, mercy is given to that person. But justice has also been fulfilled. Now, this is where people misunderstand mercy. They seem to think that God just lets you off the hook. But you will find as you go on and on in these writings, I can't explain this, I was going to say fully, I can hardly explain it at all, because it's a huge mystery, but that everything in God himself, everything outside of him in creation, has an extraordinary balance. Everything has to be right. It's an extraordinary ecosystem. Like justice and mercy actually balance each other. And there's an extraordinary order in them as well. And so if God shows mercy to us in the sense of merely letting you off the hook and justice has not been done, well, then there's disorder in his system. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Now, I can't explain it. I've tried a tiny bit. Is that okay? But he won't allow disorder in the system. In other words, some people will give you the impression that the garden is beautiful, but that the back of the garden is a complete dump. So that everything has simply been shoved down to a part of the garden that is now unusable. And God won't do that. You don't just dump. Is that okay? So justice has to deal with things and mercy does the healing. So the victim soul takes the justice onto themselves and then the healing goes out to the other person. Is that all right? But eventually when that person grows a bit spiritually, they can carry some of the justice as well. So we all, within our own life experience, carry the justice and the mercy. We can discuss that later if we want. So he said, you have the strength to disarm me because you take on the pains of others as well as Jesus. Unless I don't want it, like last night, he said, and I bound your arms very tightly to make you not to oppose my will. But they, that's the saints, no longer have these weapons in their power, so much so that if I have to chastise, I hide from you who can come up with something, but not them. The saints can't come up with anything that he doesn't know about, but the pilgrim soul on earth can come up with something. I find that fascinating, isn't it? So Louisa says, certainly, Jesus, you must take more contentment from my love than from theirs, because theirs is the love of the blessed. They see you, they enjoy you continuously and are absorbed within your most holy and divine will. They are completely dissolved in you. How great can their love really be since they receive continuous life from you? But I'm the poor one and your privations alone cause continuous death. He said, ah, poor daughter of mine, you're right. Okay, so October the 18th, we're coming into love games. Jesus plays with the soul. Now, one of the images that people, certainly of my generation, don't want to deal with at all is that God could play. And we seem to only accept play among children. But you know that play among children is hugely educational, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I want to give you the Song of Songs, chapter 2, verse 16, to start us off. This morning, my most sweet Jesus just barely made himself seen in the act of putting his finger in my mouth, almost wanting me to raise my voice to speak to him, telling me, make me a lullaby of love. I want to distract myself a little from that which creatures are doing to me. Speak to me of love. This is volume 10. We've already had this lullaby stuff before, haven't we? Mm-hmm. So in the next tiny section, we have the dart of love. Louisa said, you do it first and I will learn from you how to do it. And Jesus told me many things about love, adding, shall we play? And Louisa said, yes. And he seemed to take an arrow from his heart, sending it into mine. Now, sending an arrow into my heart, I wouldn't have actually called it play myself. No. There's a huge statue of Teresa of Avila. I think it's in Clarendon Street. Mm-hmm. It's very dramatic, you know, she's like this and she's receiving the dart in her heart because in the 16th century, it was the most outlandish thing that anybody had ever said, that God would actually send a dart of love into your heart. So they have her in this very dramatic, and I look at it and say, that's stupid. Not like that. But obviously whoever made the statue obviously thought that this was fierce dramatic. Jesus calls it play. Isn't it amazing? And of course it happens in a split second. Anything he does happens in a split second, so you don't need the big pose. I mean, who are you trying to impress? So he seemed to take an arrow from his heart and sending it into mine. I felt I was dying with pain. That's why calling it play, I think, is extraordinary. And I writhed with love. Song of Songs 5:1. Song of Songs 5:1. And also Song of Songs 8:7. Then Jesus said, I did it, now you do it. Okay. And Louisa said, I don't know what to send you. In order to do it for you, I must use your own things. And so I took the arrow, in other words, that had been sent to her, and I threw it into his heart. And Jesus was wounded and fainted. Absolutely incredible. That's Song of Songs, chapter 2, verse 5. And I sustained him in my arms. Who can say all the nonsense? Now, if we knew all about mystical expressions of love, we'd be talking about it all night. But I think I'll leave it there. Is that all right? because it's a little bit higher than where we're at. So now, at the best moment, she said, he disappeared without even helping me to turn. It seemed that an angel wanted to help me. And I said, no, I want Jesus. Uh-oh, that reminds you of Mary of Magdala, doesn't it? Where did you put him? That's John 20, verse 13. She wasn't interested in the angels, she only wanted him. And yet people's experience of God nowadays is so light and so far from this that they'll write books if they meet an angel. You know? And so she said, my angel, call him. You see, Mary Magdala said, where did you put him? Just tell me where he is. I'm not interested in you. Call him, otherwise I will stay here. And I cried out loudly, come, come, Jesus. And it seemed that Jesus came. I won him, she said. Now, she's at this for quite some time. I want to win him, isn't she? Bravo, Jesus, she said. And while helping me to turn, he told me, you offend the angel. I love that expression. I absolutely love it. Why? Because she told the angel plainly, I'm not interested in you. You know what I mean? And she ordered the angel around. And so she wasn't treating the angel as a superior being. Do you know what I mean? And someone who is forever in the presence of God. That's it. He said, you're offending the angel. I just love that. I want to give you Hebrews 1:13. It says that the angels are sent to help those on their way to salvation. They're not used to being ordered around. And Louisa said, it's not true. I want everything from you, she said. Besides, he knows that I must love you over everything else. She doesn't let Jesus away with anything. I think this relationship is fascinating. I don't know if you find it fascinating, do you? I do. Because when I was growing up, you sort of got the impression that if there was a relationship with God, it was all me doing the right thing and him sort of saying, well, yeah, she got that one, we'll let her pass. So it was a bit like a teacher and a pupil kind of thing, but there was none of this lovey-dovey stuff. Okay, so October the 19th, 1911, again, we're still on love, okay. This morning, my beloved Jesus wanted to escape me and I clasped him tightly in my arms. And since Jesus wanted to wriggle free, I said to him, you teach me. The day before yesterday, you bound me tightly in such a way that I was unable to make one movement. And I let you do it, she said, so that on the right occasion, I could repay you by doing the same thing. Isn't that unbelievable? Now, she said, you be quiet and let me do it. I want to speak to you in your ear, she said, more so since I don't feel like shouting. And it seems that in these last days you wanted to make me shout by playing deaf, by pretending not to understand me. And I was forced to repeat and to shout in order to make myself understood. I don't know how, but every once in a while you come up with something new. She's totally fascinating. And Jesus said, I was deafened by the offences of the creatures, as human beings, and in order to be distracted and cheered, I wanted to hear your harmonious voice, so I pretended not to hear. Very interesting. You do not know what echo of maledictions comes from the earth. The voices of love and of praise, that shouldn't be praises, the voices of love and of praise break this pestilential echo and relieve me quite a bit. Isn't that interesting? Yeah, relieve me quite a bit. In the meantime, it seemed that Blessed Mother was coming. And Louisa said, oh, Mother, come. And she called her. So she said, love Jesus very much. Keep him content. Love is his happiness. Naturally, because God is love. And Louisa said, it seems that somehow he is content. I do what I can to love him, but it seems to me that you can make him content more than I can, naturally. And she said, my daughter, this is very interesting now. The love of heaven is his own, but he wants to gain the love of the earth. And this is why on this side, you can make him more content. by loving him, and much more by suffering. So it's on earth, the battle is to find souls who will love God more and more and more. Okay. And Louisa said, if you knew, Mother, what he does to me. Now she's complaining about him. This is very interesting. He leaves me. He reaches the point of denying sufferings to me in order to chastise. Listen to what he told me the day before yesterday. He wants to let foreign people come into Italy. How much ruin will that not produce? He really wants to insist and to make me surrender. He bound me very tightly to his will. And Jesus said, are you accusing me? That's hilarious, isn't it? And Louisa said, certainly I have to accuse you before your mother. Because she entrusts you to me, recommending that I be well attentive so as not to let you operate chastisements. And she told me even to be daring, well, you certainly are, in order to disarm you. Isn't that true, Mother? She said. So notice they're all getting blamed. And she said, yes, it is true. And I want you to continue on, she said, because grave chastisements have been prepared. Therefore, love him very much, for love will sweeten him at least. And that's fascinating, isn't it? And Louisa said, I'll do that I'll do what I can. I feel I love him only. We wouldn't say alone. I love only him is the way we would put it. You know what I mean? So much that I can't be without him. Sorry. That I can be without you, that is Blessed Mother, but I can't be without him. And you certainly don't feel sorry about that, because you know that you want that I must love Jesus the most among everybody. Now, there you have Louisa, because of this extraordinary call that she has, not only to be a victim soul, but to be the one that is to open the kingdom of the divine will to everybody else. She must actually love God more than anybody else, like Blessed Mother loved. We're talking about on the earth now. Blessed Mother loved God more than anybody else, so he could use her to do all his work. But you'll find that the saints will always have said to the Lord, I want to love you more than anybody else. Saint Therese of Lisieux is famous for that. Yeah. So October the 20th, 1911, we're going to be talking about reparation. Very necessary if there's war coming on. My adorable Jesus aroused compassion, she said. He was crying very, very much, leaning his face on mine, and I could feel his tears flowing over me. In seeing him cry, I too was crying, and I said, what is it, Jesus, that makes you cry? Oh, please don't cry. I beg you, pour it into me and let me share in your bitterness, but do not cry, for I feel I'm dying of sorrow. Poor Jesus, what have they done to you? And I caressed him and I kissed him to soothe his crying. Jesus said, my daughter, you do not know what they do to me. If you saw it, you would die of sorrow. Isn't that amazing? And then you would say that I must not let the foreigners come. But in what they do, they themselves are snatching this scourge from me. They have snatched from me the scourge of war. They have snatched from me, understood, the destruction of cities. Therefore, my daughter, you have to have patience. Louisa said, in seeing you cry, I feel my arms being broken. In other words, he knows how to disarm her as well. And I am unable to tell you not to do it. I just tell you, take me first, because being in heaven, I will think as those of heaven. While being on the earth, I will not think as those of heaven, and therefore I feel I cannot resist in seeing all this. It seemed that the sorrow of Jesus and the necessity that someone relieve him were so great that he stayed with me almost for the whole time. And I would speak to him of love, I would make reparation, and I would pray with him. And then I would check his head to see if he had the crown of thorns so as to remove it from him. And Jesus felt like staying. He seemed to let me do everything. The sins that were being committed were so great that he shunned going into the midst of people. No S. Then he poured a little bit of the sweet liquor into me and said, you too need to be cheered. Oh, how good is Jesus. Now, that sweet liquor is physical, moral and spiritual strength that he's actually giving to her. So October the 23rd, 1911, we're talking about love again. And he says that we must be all love. This morning, my beloved Jesus came, but who can say how much in suffering he makes himself seen? It seems that he feels within himself all the pains of the people. And they and they are so many that he looks for refreshment and relief. Now, after keeping him with me in silence, telling him my nonsense of love as a refreshment and adding kisses and caresses, it seemed he was relieved. And then he told me, my daughter, let the life of your heart be all love. Very awkward expression in English. He says, let your whole being be love. Let the whole reason for living be love. Let your motivations be love. Let everything be love. Let love take over completely, because God is love. And that means that God is able to truly live with this person. Let nothing else enter into it, because I want to take food from within your heart. And if I do not find it all love, it's not enjoyable food for me. Now, he's saying, I want to draw from you. Now, God doesn't need anything himself. It's always for others. As for the other parts of you, you can give each one of it its office. That is, to your mind, to your mouth, to your feet and all the senses. You can to some adoration, to some reparation, to some praise, thanksgiving and all the rest. But from your heart, I want love only. So he says the heart is in the Bible was the symbol of love. It's not, I shouldn't say that. The heart nowadays is the symbol of love since Christianity came. But in the Bible, the heart was the symbol of your own inner person. Okay, your entire person. So if the heart is all love, it means your desires, your motivations, everything inside of you, what makes you tick, we would say, is love. Is that all right? So October the 26th, 1911, we're still talking about love. Jesus continues to make himself seen, but wanting to hide within me. Okay, so for hide within me, I want to give you Luke 17:21, hide within me, for those words. I want to give you Luke 17:21, the kingdom of God is within you. Okay, it's the first line. And I want to give you 1 Corinthians 3:16, know you not that you are the temple of the living God and the Holy Spirit dwells in you. So he wanted to hide within me so as not to see the evils of the people outside. I seemed to find myself outside of myself, and I saw venerable men all dismayed, speaking about the war and with great fear. And then the Queen Mother made herself seen, and Louisa said, my beautiful mother, what will happen with the war? And she said, my daughter, pray. How many troubles. Pray, pray, my daughter. Of course, when she visited us in Fatima, what did she say? Pray, pray, make reparation. Okay. Louisa said she was dismayed and prayed to good Jesus, but it seems that Jesus does not want to pay attention to me now. Even more, it seems that he does not even want me to talk about this. It seems he only wants refreshment, and the only refreshment he wants is love. Why? Because there's no love going up to him from the earth. Okay. Instead of pouring bitterness, he pours sweetness. And if I say, you are full of bitterness and you pour sweetness into me, he says, my daughter, I can pour out bitterness with everybody. Uh-oh. What does that mean? That's chastisement. But the outpourings of love, the sweetness, I can pour only into one who actually loves me. One who is all love for me. Don't you know that love, too, is a necessity for me and that I need it more than anything else? OK, 1 John 4:7-17. God is love. And I want to give you a statement of John of the Cross, 16th century. Love can be repaid by love alone. Love can be repaid by love alone. That's a terribly important principle for anybody wanting to live a spiritual life. Love can be repaid by love alone. So November the 2nd, 1911, we have to allow the Lord to literally spiritualize us. Now, as we go on in the higher volumes, this will all be explained in much greater detail. So here we're going to talk about truly spiritual love. Continuing in my usual state, blessed Jesus came for just a little. And as I lamented to him because he was coming only in passing and did not give me time to tell him anything about the many needs that exist. With the addition that when he comes, he clasps me tightly. He transforms me so much into his will. That's to keep her from resisting. As to leave me not even a little space to be able to plead for his creatures. So Jesus said, my daughter, you always want to know everything. Isn't that fantastic? We're like the cat. Curiosity killed the cat. I tell you, things will be grave. That's World War I we're talking about now. Extremely grave. And this is the whole reason for it. That if I placed myself in intimacy with you, you would bind me and you would come up with something of yours. Now, she told him a few messages back that he comes up with new things every now and then as well. And he's telling her, you'll come up with them as well. Rather, you must have patience and let me bind you for now. Okay. And then he took a heart of light and placed it in my interior, adding, you will love, you will speak, you will think, you will repair. You will do everything by means of this heart. Okay? In other words, she's going to be giving completely spiritual love. This is a very good introduction for volumes 11 and 12. Very good. So in other words, she's going to love with his love. She's going to love with his heart. And when we enter the divine will, we adore with his adorations, we love with his love, and so on and so on. So notice you will speak with his love, you will think, and you will also make reparation. So making reparation with the love of the Sacred Heart of Jesus means you're making reparation with something that really makes a difference. Okay. So let's come to November the 18th, 1911. And we're going to be talking about the crucifixion of the human will. This is our favourite topic, isn't it? Okay. So, as I was lamenting to Jesus because of his privations, especially in these days, and because he doesn't even let me see anything anymore, no wonder she wouldn't let him off with anything. Blessed Jesus told me, my daughter, I am here in your heart. That's Luke 17:21. The kingdom of God is within you. I'm here in your heart, and if I no longer let you see anything, it's because I have left the world to the mercy of itself. Now you have world war. The worst punishment that God can give to us is to leave us. And that worst punishment is given by St. Paul in Romans chapter 1, the whole chapter, where he says three times, about the ancient city of Rome, that God abandoned them to their terrible sins. God abandoned them. God abandoned them. It's frightening. You have also Jeremiah 7, verses 1 to 15, where the Lord says, I'll stay in your temple under the following conditions. You have Ezekiel chapter 10, where the Lord abandoned the temple and the city. Ezekiel chapter 10. And he didn't come back until they repented. And that's Ezekiel chapter 11. Okay. So I have left the world. That means the world will turn into pure hell. And it did in World War I, didn't it? They called it the war to end all wars, didn't they? And it ended nothing. And since I have withdrawn from the world, I've withdrawn from you also. In other words, there's no point in you trying to resist me to do something for them. Sorry, the time has come. The equivalent thing I would give you there, I think it's in Revelation chapter 11, a very simple statement, the wait is over. Everything will continue. And I think it's Revelation 11. And it would be at the kind of in the first couple of verses. The waiting is over. So now she hears why he hasn't been telling her what's going on, because the die is cast now. This is why you don't see what's happening in these days. But for you, I'm always intent on watching and listening to what you want. Have you perhaps asked me for anything? Have you been in need of my teachings and I've not paid attention to you? On the contrary, I am assisting you so much that I've placed you in the condition of feeling the need of nothing. She's so content because he's given her his own heart, hasn't he? And she feels so content. She actually, that's the greatest riches on earth, is to need nothing. The people who need everything and have got to travel everywhere to see everything and experience everything and want everything, they are very empty. But a person who actually needs nothing is immensely rich. Your only need, he said, is my will, and that the consummation of love be accomplished in you. He's going to explain that now in volumes 11 and 12. My will is like a spring, and the more the soul penetrates into my will, the more this spring of my will extends. And the soul takes greater part in all of my goods. So in this period of your life, I want you all intent on forming the perfect consummation of yourself in love. So that's your Ephesians 3, 19 or 16 to 21, I think it is. So he wants to bring her to the summit of love. And Louisa said, but sweet love of mine, I'm very concerned about my current state. In other words, she doesn't understand what's going on. He is changing her over into a completely new vocation. And you see, the priests can't help her. They've never had anyone who's had this experience before. She said, what a change. And you know it. Also, suffering has run away, she said. It seems it is afraid to come near me. Is this not a dismal sign? So Jesus is going to explain to her in the next paragraph that real crucifixion is the crucifixion of your will in the divine will. That's it. This is the final crucifixion. And so she will have gone from an external experience of the Passion of Christ to a completely internal one. That the crucifixion of the will is the highest level of a crucifixion you can experience. So much so that Jesus will say that once a person has reached this point, there's nothing else for him to ask of us. Isn't that amazing? Mm-hmm. So Jesus said, what you're saying is false. If I did not keep you as though bound, you would get up from your bed, in other words. What is the meaning of your not being able to move by yourself, of needing others in everything? Is this not a sign that I keep you bound? Having released you from the bonds of my presence, my love uses different devices to keep you bound with me. You must know that true crucifixion does not consist of being crucified in your hands and feet, but in all the particles of soul and body. If you underline or colour anything, you do it now. Therefore, I keep you more crucified now than before. Because you can see from the dialogues that we've had tonight that she just did not want what Jesus wanted in this war. And, you know, he pulls her right out of the thing and lets her will be crucified. So I always say to people that our motto must be, not my will, but thine be done. OK. And with people at our level, all he does is he gives you an experience every now and then of somebody crossing your will so that you can actually give him the gift. You must know that true crucifixion does not consist of being crucified in your hands and feet, but in all the particles of your soul and body. Therefore, I keep you more crucified now than before. How long did the exterior crucifixion in my hands and feet last? Only 3 hours. But the crucifixion of all the particles of my being and the crucifixion of my will in the will of the Father lasted for the whole of my life. That's the total surrender, absolute giving of the will. Don't you want to imitate me in this also? If I really wanted to release you, you would be fine. As if you had not been in bed even for one day. That's a major statement that he has made to her, that the miracle of her lying in bed for many years and not getting all kinds of illnesses is just incredible. And he tells her that if he pulled her out of it, she would be the same as if she had not been in bed for 26 years. Isn't that incredible? Mm-hmm. But if the rest of us spent a few months in bed, you'd have muscle wastage and all kinds of stuff. It would be as if you had not been in bed for even one day. However, I promise you that I will come back soon. Now, the next one is short, so I'm going to finish with this one tonight. And it's on the divine word. I think it's beautiful. I continue in my most bitter days, Louisa said, though resigned to the will of God. My beloved Jesus, if he makes himself seen, is always afflicted and taciturn. Now, whenever he's afflicted and taciturn, of course, it means chastisements. It seems he no longer wants to pay attention to me in anything. Now, look at all that Jesus has been saying, what he's doing inside in her. And she comes along and says, he doesn't want to tell me anything. It's amazing. It's amazing how little we understand of what God is doing in us. It's easy to see it in somebody else, but it's not easy to see it in yourself. So this morning, making himself seen, he put two earrings in my ears. Now, that's not, I wouldn't associate that with him, would you? No. So shining as to look like two suns. Then he told me, my beloved daughter, for one who is all intent on listening to me, my word is like a sun, which not only delights the hearing, but nourishes the mind and satiates the heart with me and also with love. They don't want to understand. They are the priests. The priests don't want to understand that all my intent is to have all of you intent with me. How could the priests understand? Louisa doesn't know what's going on, and she's not able to tell the priests what's going on, and therefore they've nothing to work on. Okay? So the priests don't understand that I want you just all for myself. So this is the case of the lover and his beloved. Okay, it's all Song of Songs stuff. He said, and that I want this without paying attention to anything else. Look at her, pointing at someone, with her way of scrutinizing everything. Now, scrutinizing is what we would call rationalizing, because that's our big problem from the 20th century, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You rationalize everything. We want to understand everything, control everything, and only surrender when we understand. Isn't that right? So pointing at someone else, he said, look at her way of scrutinizing everything. She pays attention to everything. She's affected by everything, even up to excess. You don't need the ES. And even in holy things, this is nothing but living outside of me. All this rationalizing means you're not surrendering your will at all. And one who lives outside of me by necessity feels herself very much. That means you're very much in touch with your anxieties and your worries and your feelings and your passions and your up and down stuff. She thinks she does honour to me, but it's all the opposite. Isn't that amazing? I'm going to stop there for tonight.